This is CliffCentral.com.
Good morning, everybody. What's happening? We are here. We're live. Ben Karpinski, C.S. Angwenny, Gareth Cliff, and imminently Gordon Laws. Seems he can find his way here. You'd think he'd know by now.
Ooh,
yeah.
Y'all are shady.
So, what's happening?
Ben Karpinski's message in our group is happening right now.
Now, what did Ben do?
Care to explain, Ben?
Well, Gord just sent a message saying, running a little late. So, I respond, running? Fair question. I mean,
what are you questioning there, Ben?
I don't know. It's a very loose term for someone with Gordon.
Cunty. Yeah, oh, cunty.
Absolutely. Very cunty.
Yeah, right. stretch and yawn. Jeez, I've become very aware of how bad my posture is. Like, I just don't... I should be conscious, especially when you're sitting in front of a computer or, you know, screen or whatever. Yes. You sit up straight. It's probably because everybody, when I was a little kid, stand up straight, boy. Sit straight, boy. Keep your back straight, boy.
It's important. It's so important.
Well, it's what... Really, it's the difference between us and our hominid ancestors is that we can sit up straight. Mm. They were crouched over because they were... The foramen magnum, which is the hole through which the spinal cord is joined to the brain...
Yes.
...is positioned in such a place in humans that it can be upright. We can walk upright with our shoulders back and our heads up straight.
With pride.
Yeah. Not like our ancestors who skulked around... And their heads were slightly forward on there.
But that's also because they had very small doorways.
Yeah, they did have...
It was a terrible part of planning on their side.
And terror everywhere.
Terror everywhere.
Everything was trying to kill them and eat them, including their fellow Australopithecines.
I missed that model at school.
See, I just walked back into the room and he's like, what the hell are you talking about?
Australopithecines.
Oh. Our ancestors, our hominid ancestors, Sia, that were discovered just here in the cradle of humankind. I drove past Maropeng the other day. Yeah, I've got that magnificent museum out there. Mm-hmm. They really do it. It's beautiful and it's so well put together. And
I've actually never been, but I've heard it's an amazing experience.
Please go. You have to see it.
You go underground.
You know, this is the kind of thing that you realize sometimes too late. Like, you would get in a plane and go and see the Louvre in France, right?
Yeah.
You'd get in a plane and you go and see the Houses of Parliament in Britain. You'd get in a plane and go and see the Great Wall of China. This is our treasure. This is far, far, far older than all of those things. And
it's an interesting way of putting it.
And is a direct path to how we connect to animals. It is, I reckon, more important that young children are made to understand evolution and where we come from and our kinship with animals. It's more important that they understand that and get to grips with, the aggressiveness of this carnivorous southern ape creature that we come from.
Mm-hmm.
And that they are comfortable with that, that they understand that that's okay, that that's where we're from, that that's why... Sometimes you behave the way that you do. It's far better an explanation than anything that any of the philosophers or psychologists or psychiatrists, even Freud, could put up with. Yes, it's here. It's right next door.
Good point.
So we take it, we take it for granted. We're like,
yeah,
I'll get there eventually. You would get in a plane. You would go in a taxi. You would stay in a hotel. You'd spend a lot of money to go and see this stuff in any other country. And you'd think, I wish I lived there because then I'd be able to see it anytime I wanted. And they've got, there's the Origins Center here at Wits, which is equally impressive. And I've been to that, and I've been to Maropeng, and I've actually been to the site at Sterkfontein where they found some of the fossils.
Wow.
It's magic. And once you see this stuff, it removes some of the bullshit that you concoct in your head. You actually see it.
It also distracts you from current day bullshit, of which there's lots.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It puts everything into perspective. I mean, we're talking what? I can't remember how many million years. It could be 2 could be a lot more.
Yeah, it is quite a thing of us taking some of these historic sites for granted. You think about how we live in Joburg, but how many of us have been to Nelson Mandela's house in Soweto, or the Hector Peterson Memorial, or the Apartheid Museum.
I'm happy to say I've done those as well. I love the fact that we live in such an interesting, you know, all these scientists who discovered all these things, these hominid skeletons and fossils. These people, they lived here in Johannesburg. Boring Johannesburg. Greedy gold rush Johannesburg.
Traffic filled Johannesburg. Yeah.
So it's the Australopithecus Africanus, which is the one that I'm talking about, was around 3.3 to 2.1 million years ago, somewhere around there. Look at this thing.
Oh, jeez.
That's where welcome, everybody. That's where you come from.
Homo erectus is my favorite.
I wonder why.
I resonated with that at school.
Homo erectus, huh? You know, it's got nothing to do with a penis.
You know, or a homo? Damn it.
Or a homo.
My life is a lie. That's the one I knew about at school.
Also, not very attractive, Homo erectus.
Yo.
I don't know. It's got a certain look.
What look is
there? Look up this stuff. It's amazing. Amazing.
Looks like Homo erectus has spent too much time in the sun and also has a bad wig.
Because this is the greatest period. I mean, we're talking, if this is 2 million years ago, then everything that happened between 2 million years ago and now is what we call human history. Right?
Sure.
That's not a long time. I mean, think about 2 million rand buys you a nice house, okay? If you had to go rand for rand and earn each rand, you wouldn't live long enough to be able to... If you only earned a rand a day, you wouldn't live long enough to be able to buy that house.
No, of course not.
But it's still not a long period of time.
Well, in the greater scheme of things, of course not. But our lives are what, like 80 years? Of course it's a long time.
Okay, so if we've been around on the face of the earth for less than 2 million years...
You forget, as humans, we only care about ourselves.
I know.
We can't look past our own existence.
This is exactly why this stuff fascinates me. Is because... 2 million years in the scheme of things on the Earth, which is what, 4.5 billion years old, is nothing. And it is about us, because these are our ancestors, these are our origins. And these creatures, as frightening as some of them may look, and as frightened as they must have been, and they were carnivorous and they were hunters, and they would kill each other and they would eat meat wherever it came from. These things are us. They're in you. They aren't extinct. Certain branches might have gone extinct, but part of what they were is in your DNA. And that you've got to come to terms with. So it is about you.
Yeah, it's a good point.
You. This is the you right inside. This is the you that programs fight or flight. This is the you that does a lot of the thinking when things go wrong.
Oh, jeez.
This is the you that wants to gnaw through a piece of raw meat. Not in your case, Sia.
Yeah, sorry. That is the one.
You're much more evolved than me, but yeah. I mean, really, it's just fascinating to know this stuff. And there's so many new discoveries being made. I mean, we had Prof. Lee Berger in here the other day, and I'd love to have him back. Talk to him again, because this guy, he's a treasure, and he lives here. You could go and see him. I'm going to attend one of his lectures. What are we doing? We're all sitting around going, I really want to go to India this year because I want to have a spiritual enlightenment.
Hey.
No, really.
I want to go climb Kilimanjaro for cerebral palsy.
Yeah, I really want to go to Sao Paulo. I've heard they've got a great building there that's worth seeing. It's here. It's fucking here. Go down the road and you could walk through caves that you're... earliest ancestors bludgeoned each other to death in. Now that's fascinating.
Oh.
Don't tell me it isn't. Anyway.
Wow.
There's something to think about this morning. Put that in your diary. If you're listening to me now and you want to know something and you want to improve your knowledge and you want to expand your horizons, make a date to go to Murupeng or to the Origin Center and you can thank me later. Because you will. You'll be grateful. You'll be very pleased you did.
Okay.
This is interesting stuff.
And also, where this is, it's a great weekend away for romantic purposes or just taking some new scenery. Yes. It's a lovely part of this country. And
they've got beautiful restaurants around there. They've got like these little places you can take a weekend away.
Yeah.
What Ben is talking about. You and Daniela went there recently.
It's like Khao Teng's garden route.
Yeah.
To give you a sort of very direct analogy to where I was last week.
And go now in the summer while it's beautiful, because winter it's depressing and brown.
And that area, apparently there's a place called Happy Island now.
What is this?
Amazing water world place.
Yeah, you sent me a picture of this and said we have to go and check this place out, but I didn't know what you were talking about.
So it's the biggest wave pool in Africa. It's gigantic. There's all these most amazing slides, and it's all kind of in that area, the near Past Lanseria cradle wedding belt thing.
Yes, the wedding
wedding belt.
That's what most people know that area for.
Because, like, if you think water slides, obviously Valley of the Waves, Sun City, that's all we really have in this country. I know there's a few other slides that small children urinate on the coast, but that's all we got. This thing, it's like, it's huge, but it's like a gigantic water park.
Mm-hmm. That sounds good.
Yeah, I really want to go. I just got so much work on right now.
You know where I
don't want to go on the weekend with children.
I haven't been. Right. I haven't been to that Nyrock Sculpture Park, which is apparently magnificent.
That's also
too.
In that same area. It's amazing.
You know what? God bless the West Rand.
Yeah.
Let's say something nice. You know, we're always rude about the West Rand. No, we talk about inbred white people who live in Krugersdorp.
But that is a bit rougher.
Yeah, of course it is.
Let's rather just focus on...
You have to go there armed, but let's just put that aside.
Put that aside.
Let's just say Mulder's Drift.
There's a...
Yeah, not
still
included.
Want to differentiate.
Up to, but not including Krugersdorp, all right?
Oh, it will still count, Shem. They have some great scenery.
Yes, they do.
Counts for something.
Yes.
The drive is just a lot. I'm taking a weekend away this week, and I'm going about 2 hours out of town, and already that's getting me kind of off.
Life is going to be so tough.
I know it is a 21st century problem, but driving is a lot. So Marupeng is what, like 40 minutes out of town?
Do you know? Are you bad with gears? Do you have anxiety around braking? How is 2 hours stressful?
Oh goodness. Okay, I'll put it aside for the greater scheme of things.
I love a long car drive. Yesterday I was talking to someone about this. I had a meeting with... Oh, it was Adrian Groenewald. He popped in. Mm-hmm. You know, he lives now in... like the Kruger Park.
Yes.
Adrian lives on the border of the Kruger Park somewhere, and he hardly ever comes in here. And we had a little catch up yesterday, and he drives, so it's about a 4 or 5 hour journey. And he does it once every 2 weeks or whatever. And the rest of the time he's living in paradise. He's living in this place far from civilization where he's got running water and electricity, so he's not an animal, but he's living in this beautiful place, and he comes here, and he says that car journey for him is meditative.
Hmm. Of course.
He gets to make a few calls and do a few practical things, but he also gets to think. While you're driving, you can do other things. Like your mind wanders a little bit. You think about the place that you're driving through. You think about what you've got to do that day. You consider all the things that you've left unattended. Yes, there's something about that. I like a long car journey. I really do.
Not for me.
No, you don't like it.
Too much going on, too much anxiety. It's just like, can we get there now? Then you're road tripping with people, and the person to your left loves salt and vinegar chips, and the smell is too much. Then that person is snoring. No.
I said I'm on your own.
Even on my own. It's just too long.
Love and journey
even
on
his own. It's still the salt and vinegar chips and the snoring that plagues him.
Thanks, Ben, because my multiple personalities also take ownership of the space.
No. There's some seriously practical stuff for you to think about, and put this in the diary and find a gap somewhere between now and winter. Say to yourself, you know what? I'm going to go and see the cradle of humankind. I'm going to go and visit some of these places that I haven't been on in the surrounds of Johannesburg, and there are beautiful places around here. Everybody goes, I've got to go to the vineyards in Cape Town. And here, there's stuff on your doorstep that is so relevant.
Well, another great thing about the vineyards in Cape Town is they've got wine. You know what else also has wine?
What?
Any other hotel.
Or restaurant.
Or restaurant.
In any part of South Africa.
It's not like you... I mean, look, I love the wine dance, right? But it's not like you're going and physically picking the grapes and then making your... No, you're just drinking wine that's been bottled.
And you're having them in a pleasant setting.
Yeah. So when you go to the Cradle after going to see this amazing thing, you can still drink wine in a nice setting.
Right.
Same thing.
There we go. Hey, Gord. What's happening, dude?
How's it, dudes?
Hi.
Hey, Gordon Laws.
Yeah, nice to see you guys.
How are you feeling, Gord?
I'm feeling good. Quite regularly and with a tender touch. How are you feeling, good?
Was that punny or you're feeling good? Okay.
The cool thing about the Cradle is it's got every known shade of brown, which is like
also true.
One of its selling points. Yeah, it's a kaleidoscope of brown.
Good point.
Mm.
Did you ever go through a stage at school where you were fascinated by cavemen?
I thought this was going back to feeling good. I'm still fascinated by cavemen.
I mean, we did a module, I suppose you could call it, when in early primary school, like the first 3 years of primary school, and it just captured my imagination. I was drawing little pictures of all the different stages of human evolution, and I was learning the names. And for a, what was I, 7, 8, 9, I was learning these names, and I thought, oh my God, this is the most fascinating thing ever. And all I would dream about was being a guy who digs out bones.
And yeah,
really?
Anthropological paleontologist.
Yeah, it went away. I mean, eventually it went away. But can you imagine, right here on our doorstep is the best place to... You could, like Lee Berger did. Remember, he was walking with his son. What was this, about 7 years ago? They were just walking around near the Cradle of Humankind. They were walking in the veld there, and his son kicked over a rock, and they found the skull of Australopithecus sediba. I mean, that's big deal.
Mm.
And it could happen to anyone. Luckily, his dad happens to be a paleoanthropologist, so that helps. You don't go, oh, wow, a skull.
Can you imagine the amount of things that Gord could have found if he wasn't on mushrooms while hiking? Gord probably went over that like a month prior.
Think about the things he has.
Once took mushrooms and then went and did the botanical gardens. And we had some friends of mine, and like we wondered, I didn't know that if you wander into the botanical gardens and you keep wandering like for a really long time, it kind of just naturally sort of blends into rich people's gardens. It doesn't like have an end. It doesn't. If you go up the hill, you'll end up on top of the mountain. And if you go left, you'll go through houses and eventually hit a road. So we eventually realized, like, oh my God, like the natural landscape is becoming so much more mowed and like kept.
Manicured.
And manicured. And the flower beds are like naturally starting to arrange themselves. No. So we realized like we were literally in some dude's garden, like staring fascinated at flowers, laughing hysterically, sitting down and making a circle, sharing a bag of knickknacks, having a laugh.
And there was a guy.
No, they didn't see us, but we were literally in
someone's. Because their garden was so enormous.
It's like they just mowed it to a point, and at the point where they stopped mowing, now it was natural wilderness reserve.
Because what would you do if you look outside and you find like 6 people?
Hi.
Tripping balls. Yeah, and
well, you release the hounds like Mr. Burns.
Then we realized it was getting dark. we realized it was getting dark, and they have like a curfew where they close the place, and it's like at dark-ish or whatever, 7, I don't know what time.
Mm-hmm.
But we were like, oh shit, we're going to have to get out of here, and we have to go back. So we like urgently, without freaking out, but we urgently sort of power walked, and we'd gone far. It was several Ks. And we were like, oh shit, we're locked in. They closed that whole entrance, is like almost like a, I suppose it is a municipal facility. It turnstiles and you pay and the whole story. And there's like a wall.
Yeah.
And we were like, we're going to have to scale the wall, dudes. Like,
no.
We can't get back through the foyer entrance thing. We're going to have to find the wall and scale the wall. We were like, shit, this is going to be like epic Mission Impossible vibes. And the wall, when we got to it, was like belly button high. Just like hedge height. And it was the funniest thing that had ever happened. We were all prepared to scale the wall or call for help.
Oh my God.
And yeah, you could do the wall with your knee, your leg, flipping your legs over.
Lots to get into today. There's some news stories. We'll get to those in a moment.
Can I just point out that it's absolutely fascinating on this show, which I have been on for so long now.
Yeah.
That Leanne's stories and Gord's stories are just so Leanne and Gord stories. Like,
yes.
Only they can have these stories.
Yep.
These experiences.
It's just they're so naturally go from one to the next, just on this kind of vibe.
Yeah, it was just one day I was high and I got lost in the botanical gardens.
Why do you think we keep them separated? I mean, we keep them separate for two reasons. The first one is that...
Well, I thought it was because of sexual harassment.
Yeah, that's partly it.
But restraining order still...
I'm just waiting for the unkindness, because that was kind of nice of you, I think, to say, Ben. I'm waiting for the caveat. I'm waiting for the spikes on the beach ball of love you just threw at me.
No, I just think it's such a unique feature that you guys somehow, no matter what the subject matter, your stories always kind of just go that little step further.
Okay. I hope that's a good thing, Ben, because your stories often don't go far enough.
Oh. Now those were the spikes on the beach ball of love.
All right, children, stop it.
I'm going to let Gord laugh at himself there for a bit.
Here are some things you need to know. Let's start off with the news for this morning. All the things you're likely to be asked at the coffee machine by that annoying person in the office that you actually don't want to talk to. But you can get rid of them with some intel. Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
It's official. The Oscars will take place without a host. Surprise, surprise. We've been talking about this for weeks, months even. The upcoming Academy Awards. The biggest night in Hollywood will take place this year without a host for the first time in 3 decades, organizers said Tuesday. Well done, political correctness. You've killed one more victim in the entertainment sphere.
But again, that's not using your head. What you could have done is use all the young male actors that got molested by those producers in that pedophile ring, and they would each host a separate category. So every time they would come up, they would obviously announce who their abuser was, and then they would say, and the Oscar for best screenplay
goes to...
And then there's all these like,
so you just turn it into one big Me Too thing.
It could have happened. Another missed opportunity by Hollywood.
But is that literally, that's literally the vibe. Like,
yeah,
absolutely nobody will not offend us. Mm-hmm. Therefore, no one can play at all. We're taking the ball away.
That's right.
It's always back to that ball analogy.
This is what happens when other people...
I do like balls, Ben.
This is what happens when other people decide what's good for you. And how many people do you encounter on a daily basis who are trying to... decide for you what's good for you. They're telling Gord not to do this. They're telling Ben not to do that. They're telling Sia not to do this. They're saying Sia's wrong for that. Ben's absolutely horribly morally corrupt because of this. Gord is just a deplorable human being. And they're trying to tell you how to live your life.
Okay, but those people are right. It's like the guys that want to take away the hosts at the Oscars.
It's the same vibe.
What
it comes
hell?
From the same place.
Like, now it's going to be no fun for anybody. And I remember, like, aside from wondering best actor, best actress, best supporting actor, best supporting actress, and best movie, maybe best special effects, you don't give a shit about anything else at the Oscars. Like, you just want the host to be funny.
I don't even give a shit about that.
I used to, as a kid, love watching the Oscars. Even now, I just read about it the next day. But yep. I remember the host. It was like a long stand-up.
Joy.
I remember the Billy Crystal was the guy.
Billy Crystal, right? Yeah. Billy Crystal, Whoopi Goldberg, those kind of people. Steve Martin. And David Letterman. And God bless him, Ricky Gervais, the last great host of the Oscars.
Well, you know that the views last year were down 20%.
Mm-hmm. And they'll be down.
They'll be down hard now.
But good for you, Oscars.
Yeah.
Because you're in that soup of Hollywood where everybody pretends to be politically correct, but the whole time they're fingering each other.
Oh, they're just going to VO it now. Like, and now the category is whoever can complain the loudest for 2019.
I think they'll most probably have a lot of presenters for the various awards, and that's
it. Yeah, I actually think what's going to happen is that this is what needs to happen.
Mm.
This is actually a cleansing because nobody cares about the Oscars anymore. It's all about actors congratulating themselves. So let's put it in its rightful place, where 5 to 10 people watch it, and it's some small thing, like, you know, Miss Benoni.
Well, look, why doesn't Meryl Streep host the Oscars? Because she's so perfect.
She might, but you know what?
It's hard to have a problem with Meryl, man.
How's she going to joke for a whole 35 hours? How long's the Oscars?
Yeah, it is like a 3-hour show.
She doesn't have to, because she's so perfect. She'll just get up there, and then Bob De Niro will come out and say some shit about Trump.
The two of them could moralize. They could tell the rest of us.
Yeah.
Diggs are good moralize. But yeah.
They like telling the rest of us how we're bad people when they're the most coddled generation in human history.
And then if things get a bit flat, then De Niro will just go, fuck Trump. And then everyone will be like, oh, this guy's a visionary.
So brave. #so brave. Anyway, all right, so the Oscars. Don't stay up.
Yeah, it's a load of shite anyway. So.
Right. So it's going to its deserved place. Gregory John Lawrence. Do you know who that is?
That guy.
That's quite a fabulous name.
Yeah, do you know good. Who it is? It is a nice name.
Gregory John Lawrence personally delivered millions of rands in cash to Basasa, used to pay bribes to corrupt senior government officials and ANC officials, the State Capture Commission in of inquiry heard on Tuesday. A lot of people were asking after the revelations the last few weeks with this Bosasa scandal, how were they getting so much cash? He testified about one of the money laundering schemes used by Bosasa to access large amounts of cash without raising suspicions from the authorities. The transactions were made through the creation of fake order sheets for goods and sent to a company called Equal Trade Pty Limited. He told the commission, led by Justice Raymond Zondo, that he once worked with former Bosasa Chief Operating Officer Angelo Agrizi and later with Greg Lacon Allen, owner of Equal Trade. He worked extensively as a supplier and supplied catering goods, food items, including alcohol, to local mining companies and across the African continent.
It's amazing that any food left Bosasa.
Yeah, well, if you look at the size of some of these people. But how do you access so much cash? We were all asking this because, you know, FICA requires... I mean, if you make a withdrawal of more than 4,000 Rand from an ATM, and God bless you if you can do that, because not a lot of people can. But trust me, it gets flagged. Someone somewhere is checking.
Yeah.
On anything more than that.
I needed to draw 10 grand in cash once to pay for something.
You had to pay for something in cash?
Yeah, and I was just like, I just realized, as I said that it's just like, it's going to...
Illegal.
Prove Ben stereotypes about me. But I was helping my ex's...
Carry on, Kurt, carry on.
I was helping my ex's friends. It's just, I don't want to go off on too much of a tangent, but I was helping my ex's friends from overseas get weed for Africa Burn. And there was a big group of them, and they needed someone to help them. And so I organized... It wasn't for me. I don't smoke weed. And I mean, I would say if I did. I'd say so if
That's
I did.
A lot of
but
weed.
I had to buy, like, you know those, I think, about 5-liter jars. Like those jars that are, no one in the audience can see how my hands are being held up. But a jar this
like,
big.
It's like a 5-liter.
A big ass. I had to buy a big ass jar full of marijuana. And obviously the Oka organized it for me, did me a good deal because he had.
10 grand. That's
yeah,
expensive.
I bought 10 grand of weed. I swear it wasn't for me. And if it was, I would say so. But it was.
That's like for the whole of Africa Bird.
Yeah, my ex used to go to Africa Burn all the time, and she'd made friends with this bunch of foreigners who go every year, and they asked if she could organize the weed, and I knew where to get it. So I had to draw 10 grand, and I had to go into the bank and do it. Like, I couldn't, because my plan was to do it incrementally over a few days, but I didn't have time. Like, there's a limit, and after that you got to like sign a thing, and they want to see your ID and stuff. So the point, which I got off a bit, is like, it doesn't take a lot of cash for it to become a mission to get cash. It's not like you can only draw 100
right.
grand.
So this is what we were all thinking, is how the hell does this guy get all this Bosasa money? Anyway, he's tried to explain it now. So his explanation is that he would notify them if he had the cash available. Then they would make arrangements on where to meet. They'd meet at Bosasa head office in Krugersdorp most of the time. The amounts varied. Anytime I got 500,000, I would contact them. The highest amount delivered was probably 800,000 to a million rand in cash.
Okay, but that you can't get from a bank.
No. The deliveries carried on for months. Lawrence said he suspected Bosasa was using the cash for something underhanded. They were not a bank, so something was not right. He then started to video record the cash deliveries using his cell phone. Now, you see, this is where it gets messy, because a lot of people up to now, including Canton and Pumi on the Burning platform last week, said, well, we don't have any evidence except people's testimony yet. And that's true. But now we're starting to get video evidence. There's video of Gavin Watson inside a safe moving huge pallets of cash around. Mm. I mean, when you talk about a pallet of cash, we're talking serious money. So it's getting messy.
Also, like, what do you do with that much cash? Because you can't, like, then wheel the pallet into the bank and be like, cool, guys, I'd like to deposit this half a bar, like, in this trolley. You got to, like... You can't go buy anything significant with it, like beyond a couch or something, or a flat screen TV. They're not going to take your cash. So you can't just go buy a car. Like, what you got to basically do is then use the cash for your living expenses,
right,
clothing, incidentals, forever,
or
and try and filter the cash that you're not, the legitimate money that you're not spending, and slowly but surely over like years, launder your own money back into your account.
Right.
Well, you invest in government favors. That's probably the thing with the highest return since Bitcoin.
It is a high return, high yield investment
system.
And
you don't have to give a lot to a government minister or a person of influence. I mean, now, Dudu Mieni's situation is getting worse, but we'll talk about that later. Kasatu wants the ANC members implicated in corruption to be taken off the election list. I think that's a very sensible idea from Kasatu. Sounds like an easy thing to do. If you're suspected of corruption, and there is ongoing investigation with respect to you, and your involvement in corruption, get off the party list. It's an election year. This is a way for the ANC to clean house. It's a perfectly reasonable thing to do. These are public servants. You don't want people with greasy, dirty hands right next to the till, do you?
Yeah, look, in this case, fuck him, basically. But like you also always do in cases like this, run the hashtag MeToo risk, where now someone just based on a baseless accusation can be besmirched by a political enemy and thus have no, you know, your word is worth nothing when you try to defend yourself because you were accused. So like it's the same as that, like if 99 MeToo accusations are true and one's not, still that poor one Oaks had his life ruined for not doing anything. In the case of politicians, I feel a lot less sympathy. Yeah.
Well, look, still, it's not as if you're sending them to jail.
Because politicians have enemies.
And you're not cutting off their heads. They're just off the list. So if you have any smell of corruption around you, you're off the list. So that means you can't stand for office this year.
Yeah.
You'll have to wait for 4 years to get back on the list. That's not the most terrible thing in the world.
Except that it's a political party. So even taking corruption out of the equation, there's infighting, competition, jealousy.
So let's see it.
It's a very easy way to,
let's see it. Let's
to get
see
rid
it
of your opponent, your, who you're vying for a position with.
Good. Then let's see. But there's got to be some evidence.
And then an element of corruption comes in because you're corruptly accusing someone who's... you corruptly, falsely corruption accusing. Yes, see.
So the Congress of South African Trade Unions says those implicated in state capture and VBS mutual bank looting must recuse themselves from the ANC's election list process. Remember, COSATU is still a part of the tripartite alliance that is a very solid backer of the ANC in the elections. Without COSATU, the ANC is substantially reduced in their importance. The trade union is calling on law enforcement agencies to start investigating the allegations that are coming out of the commissions of inquiry currently underway. COSATU's president, Zingiswa Losi, says members of the ANC who've been implicated in corruption should recuse themselves from being nominated for the sake of the party, even if they have not been found guilty in a court of law.
Yeah, those are going to be like, hi, so listen, some Oaks think I'm corrupt. I'm not, but I'm going to recuse myself because COSATU asked
nicely.
They'll
never do it, right?
And it's like, yeah, no, there's no investigation or charges or anything, and I didn't even do it, but some Oaks are muttering about it, so let me just not be involved in this one. Thanks, guys, doing the right thing. See you later.
And then one last Basasa thing. State capture investigators have confirmed that former Basasa executive Angelo Agrizi wasn't lying when he said he met with Dudu Mieni at the Sheraton Hotel in 2015 and received confidential National Prosecuting Authority documents from her. Ooh, this Dudu Mieni. Commission has heard evidence from its own investigators who probed some of the allegations presented by Agrizi and other witnesses at the inquiry in Parktown. So it turns out that Gavin Watson and Angelo Agrizi met with Dudu Mieni at the Sheraton Hotel, which is right opposite the Union Buildings in Pretoria, where the former South African Airways board chairperson gave them confidential NPA documents. What was she doing with NPA documents related to an investigation into Basasa? So she is going to be in serious shit. It's not just about a Louis Vuitton bag with 300,000 rand in cash in it. It's about getting in the way of the course of justice. Vexatious events around the court.
Right now, the Guptas must be laughing. Just laughing.
At how people, incompetent these guys are?
No, but also just like this now has given them... like no one remembers the Guptas anymore. This whole Basasa thing.
So last year.
And they're thinking, our crimes are so last year, who cares?
Yeah, and it's so brazen. It's like, it's not even clever. It's like, if you've ever, like, in a relationship, like, some people, like, lie and are not... some people are calculating and other people are just crap at it. Like, be good at least at your corruption, you know? It's almost a little bit insulting when someone's trying to deceive you and they do so in a way that insults your intelligence. It's like, at least be a little bit more cunning with your bullshit.
Right.
Like, you guys are just literally standing there in plain sight, giving each other wristies.
I mean, at this point...
Doing the back and forth with the cash and the wristie on the car train.
At this point, Australopithecus Africanus is embarrassed by the amount of... like amateurishness with respect to how Basasa's
been handled. Yeah, it's like I see drive-by drug deals at the robots in Melville where the guys drive past each other and stop and then swap money and stuff. And it's more subtle than these O's. It's like, can you be any more obvious? It's like the ladies of the night in Seapoint. They like stand there and literally just show you the goods. Dudes, are we not even going to pretend to be trying to keep this on the DL?
And the last thing you need to know this morning, Police have confirmed a Durban University of Technology student has been shot and killed at the Steve Biko campus. This is scary. It's understood that students have been gathering for a meeting when an official from a private security company pepper sprayed them in an attempt to disperse the crowd. When the details have become a little bit less easy to follow here, eyewitnesses have claimed that a scuffle broke out with the guard taking out his weapon and opening fire. We were just gathering behind Standard Bank at DUT as the EFF student command members waiting for the SRC to come and brief us after the meeting. While we were still there, three of the supervisors of security came to us and wanted us to disperse. Demonstrations at tertiary institutions in KZN have continued for a second day, where the students have been demanding better accommodation and that those in need be allowed to register until NSFAS pays out. Well, you know what? You can't have everything you want. I don't know who lied to you when you were a child and said you're going to get to go to university for free and you get to stay there and someone else will pay for it. Because don't worry, the government has this endless resource called the taxpayer. And they're more than happy to support you even though your parents aren't.
Sure.
Just a thought. All right, let's get into Bitcoin.
Today on Compassion with Gareth.
And my dog, what?
Today on Compassion with Gareth, we talk about how to prepare your children for tertiary education under the government system.
Yeah, don't. Don't bother. You're wasting your money and your time. All right, quickly, this is important. Bitcoin is trading at $3,392. Ethereum at $103. And talking about Bitcoin, CliffCentral.com is thrilled to announce we are the official premium media partner for the 5th Blockchain Africa Annual Conference, which is taking place in Joburg and Cape Town. This is Africa's leading blockchain conference and will explore a range of topics which include embracing blockchain technology. And as you know, there are so many areas where this is going to be applicable that you need to probably pay attention if you're in a tech company and even if you're just interested and curious about how this might be useful to your company. There will be speakers and delegates from over 35 countries and investors, startups, enthusiasts, developers, corporates, policymakers, venture funds, and regulators. It's all happening from the 28th of February to the 1st of March in Johannesburg and on the 6th of March in Cape Town. If you want to join us, visit blockchainafrica.co to get more information and ticket details. That's blockchainafrica.co. If you act fast, you could score yourself 30% off a Joburg ticket or 20% off a Cape Town ticket. T's and C's apply. We're moving Africa forward. Are you? So head to blockchainafrica.co for more information. All right.
Those numbers that you just read out for Bitcoin and Ethereum and stuff, I mean, how are they? Is it recovering?
Crap.
Is it doing
crap,
well?
Crap.
Still going
crap,
down?
Crap.
See,
crap.
But blockchain is more than just cryptocurrency.
Yes.
So yeah, as much as no one really cares anymore about the Bitcoin price, there's so much that is happening around this whole thing.
Crap,
yeah.
Crap, crap.
Sure. There's a whole lot of changes about how it can cause people to transact and the freedom of the economy. I just wanted to know, is that up or down? Because I'm not on top of these things.
It was what, $10,000 not so long ago?
Yeah, but I mean, has it leveled out or is it still just decreasing steadily?
Just one more time, Gareth.
Crap, crap. Crap.
Thank you.
It's just crap. The price is crap, but that doesn't mean that it's not a serious factor in the world economy and that it isn't still an area that people are very, very closely watching. It's one of the reasons we still mention it every morning. We're having a problem with our messaging to the studio this morning, so if you'd like to still message us, do it on Twitter, or you can send me an email, gareth@cliffcentral.com. Carl says, I think Gervais hosted the Golden Globes, not the Oscars. You're right. That's quite correct. Sorry. Thank you, Carl. Also, thank God Gord came in. Almost ruined my Wednesday when I didn't hear him. Isn't that nice?
Oh, thank you, man. I'm sorry I almost ruined your Wednesday.
Okay. Well, you take that out of it. Is that what you... That's what you learned. Well, not that you made his Wednesday, but that you could have ruined his Wednesday.
Yes. He deserves to have it made, and I'm glad I unfucked it at the last second.
All right. Over to Ben. What's in the sport?
The allegations of Otis Gibson no longer being the protest coach after the World Cup.
What?
A baseball fan suddenly died.
Huh.
And Qatar still in some hot water over how they treat laborers.
What is going on here? Why is this thing making a noise? There we go. Sorry.
Was that Dr. Phil?
I don't know. Someone was talking in the background. Maybe we just had a crossed line with someone in America.
All right, no problem. So the Proteas will take on Pakistan today in the third and final ODI at Centurion. That is obviously up here in the Gauteng. So if you are, well, having a bit of a slow week, then get on down there. It's going to be lots of fun. The series has already been decided. The Proteas have wrapped it up. But T20 cricket is a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. I'll admit it. It is. It really is. So 30th of May, that is when the Cricket World Cup proper starts. Now, Cricket World Cup is decided over 50 overs, otherwise known as an ODI, a one-day international. Proteas will go there, no doubt, as not favourites.
Who are the favourites?
Even if they were favourites, the Proteas go to the World Cup shaking like shitting dogs because it's the most stressful time in their entire lives. Ultimately, things go well and then they crash and burn spectacularly with runouts, poor batting, and ultimate indecision. The favourites are quite simply India. If India play to 80% of their potential, they'll have no problem. If they play to 75%, they'll probably win. So you've got to think they're going to win it. And then England, though they are really shy at Test cricket, they know what they're doing with the white ball stuff. So they have home ground advantage, because that's how the ICC works. They only give these tournaments to the people who line their own pockets. So England are home ground favourites. India are world favourites. South Africa are going there just trying not to embarrass themselves.
That's a low standard.
I know that sounds dreadful, but look at the history. And I have bled, cried, and sweated for this team over the years. I really have. I've gone through the ringer, as many Proteas fans have. So don't call me cynical either. That's just what's happened. But you always think this time is going to be better. And Otis Gibson, he'll believe that this time will be better. Why? Because his contract says you will not get a renewal unless you win the World Cup. So basically, he's not going to get a renewal.
So he's probably been chatting to some people about what to do afterwards.
Well, Otis is in a decent position, right? So he's been okay as a Proteas coach. Test record's pretty good. ODI record's also pretty good. I mean, look, he's won 15 out of 11 tests and drawn once. He's only lost four times. 15 out of 25 ODIs and 8 out of 11 T20s. So he'll be known as like a handy kind of coach person. Players seem to like him, although the players always back the coach when the press asks them questions, because you can't really have a headline saying, "Captain thinks coaches are doers." So you'll never see that. So Otis has been doing all right.
It would be a great day.
Yeah. So Otis has been doing okay with his time. But did you know, he doesn't even live in this country. He lives in England. And he'll just come out when he has Protea responsibilities. Now, I was very surprised when I heard this from a good source, because I think if you're going to coach a national team, live in the country. Show some interest in what's going on around.
You'd think.
So he just flies out. So he commutes from England. He's obviously been with England. He was twice their bowling coach. And now, the rumours are circulating that because the current English coach is so bored with coaching these tosses, he doesn't want to renew his contract. Yeah, he said, thanks, no thanks. So Trevor Bayliss will be out after the World Cup. And Otis's contract finishes with the Proteas in the World Cup. You put two and two together, you might see what's going on here. Mm. And think Otis will be like, well, that's great, because I can then live at home, make more money, and probably coach with less pressure. Because the bar's low with England, let's be honest. That everyone expects him to fail. Right. Whereas here in South Africa, we'll still kind of expect the guys to do well because it is still a good team. So these are very interesting things to mull over in the future of Otis Gibson. Mm. Of course, you will hear in the press that everyone's going to think, well, Otis isn't going to make any comments because, you know, he's quietly considering his options. I think he's already made up his mind. I think all these guys have a plan in place. You can't just go blindly into your future. You've got to look after where your next contract or long-term paycheck is coming from.
Sure.
This is the professional era of, and it has been forever and ever. So I think we will see Otis skip after the World Cup. Because even if he wins with the Proteas, that'll be the high of high, right? So sure. Then he'll think, well, it can only get worse from here. So how about I just win the World Cup as a hero to South Africans, and then I'll go to England. Or sorry, in this case, just stay at home.
Or name a really high price after that because they desperately want you to stay and do it for a while longer.
Also true, Gord. So,
it's going to affect my mulling. This seriously going
to
affect my
there
mulling.
There really is much to mull. Much
it's
to mull over
be
here.
Mulling of note.
Either way, I reckon Otis is pretty chilled. He's digging his vibe right now. He gets to hang out with the Proteas. They're a nice bunch of guys. And the World Cup, well, it could dish up some surprises, couldn't it? No, India are going to win. And if they don't, then they've either thrown it or someone broke Virat Kohli's neck.
If the ice caps or the nuclear warheads don't get us first, one day we will win the World Cup, and it'll be when we like go in with no hope. It won't be one of those years where we favourites or top two or top three favourites and we bin it spectacularly. We'll surprise everyone by going in as like 8th ranked in the world, having not won a game in 2 years.
But this is the problem with the Proteus. This is the problem with the Proteus. They'll never get that low because of sheer player ability and player depth. We've just got so many good players.
People would have said the same about the Bucks 7, 8, 10 years ago.
Well, either way, slightly different situation. But we have so many great cricketers in this country that our team is always going to be sort of like top four-ish. So expectations are always going to be sort of like fixed at a certain rate. It's like, it's how it is. But then it gets to World Cup, things are different. But anyway, we'll talk more about that as we get closer to the time. A baseball fan...
More on that story later.
A baseball fan has died, but the story's only come out a year later.
What?
Linda Goldblum, she was 79, she got pinned in the head on August 29th last year while watching a baseball game at Dodger Stadium. She was there with her husband on their 59th wedding anniversary.
Oh, dude.
And she took a foul ball to the head. And then got taken to hospital 4 days later, dead. And then obviously the
sucks ass.
But like the baseball team and the family came to an agreement, so it didn't become big news. But the story has come out now. She's the first person to have died in 30 years at a baseball game. Because generally people watch where the ball goes. Linda was no doubt yacking her husband's ear off and then boom, in the head. So, you know, it's printed very heavily on the tickets for baseball. Watch out for flying balls. And a lot of people go there with their own mitts because they want to catch the ball. Because if you catch the ball, you get to keep the ball.
True.
And Linda got pinned in the head. So, 30 years ago, a kid died. And so, yeah.
Presumably also from ball impact. Like, ball. I'm sure people die of heart attacks or whatever, other falling down a flight of stairs.
Yeah.
Random other shit. But like...
Or history of bad corn rolls. Yeah.
Yeah.
But like, if you look at baseball, right, the guys throw a ball at a guy in his hitting area, and then it goes all over the place.
Yeah.
So you get the foul ball, which goes outside of the scoring area, and that's where Linda copped it.
And that's also like, you know, like in cricket, you've got behind the batsman. Firstly, it's not a round thing, so it doesn't have as much of a chance. The deflection range of angles is lower, but mostly like behind the batsman, there's a wicketkeeper, a bunch of slips, and then a length of field. Whereas in baseball, like you've got audience members not far from behind the batsman.
Yeah, you generally have a net though. So there's like netting in certain areas.
Was this lady's name Annette? Sorry, I had to. Terrible joke. Linda. I'm sorry to hear about her
Linda
dying.
Was actually saying. But yeah, she had died from acute intracranial hemorrhaging.
Before my crap joke, I was going to say that actually 30 years it's surprising that you don't get it more often. 30 years is a long time.
When you
time.
Consider how many games got played every and single year, times that by 30.
Yeah, and how these oaks bash the shit out of the ball. I mean, baseball, the ball gets thrown hard and gets hit hard.
Yeah. Well, it's a boring as hell game, so... Yeah, maybe a better place to go for your anniversary. Linda? Shame. Sorry, I know that was insensitive, but hey, rest in peace. The Super Bowl, it's going down in rankings, but then you get all sport is. So this was the lowest viewed Super Bowl final since 2008. And it also involved the New England Patriots. Now, the Patriots obviously just play boring as hell, like, football. I mean, they won 13-3. Mostly because Tom Brady's, I think, 100 years old. And he just manages everything.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's kind of like people say, oh, Bulls rugby's so boring. Back in the day when they were really good because they would just basically obliterate you with blunt force. I think the Patriots are kind of similar because they just have this amazing quarterback who just knows how to dictate play. Either way, it's actually more a global trend than it is about the fact that football's boring. People are just watching less and less live sport, watching less and less live TV. People don't want to sit down and do these kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
It is still, though, huge. So as much as it is kind of like tapering off a little bit, and it's the first time they had less than 100 million TV viewers, the money is still staggering. Absolutely staggering what they do. Because they sell all those ads, right?
Yeah, and I was disappointed in this. I care about the Super Bowl only because of the ads, and they were, for me, disappointing this year. There were one or two quite funny ones, but they were mostly disappointing. And that's what the event is about for me. It's like where they launched the year's most expensive adverts.
Well, right. 54 advertisers paid $5.2 million for 30 seconds of airtime.
Each.
54 advertisers.
That's a lot of money.
And there were 93 ads during the game. During the game, 93 ads.
And there's ads in the build-up, and there's ads afterwards. I mean, like during the analysis
during,
show.
During
being near
the, game.
The World Cup. The Super Bowl. That's being crazy, near the Super Bowl is super premium. I'm interested, though, like when you say viewership stats are down for sport, does that is across all sports? Like, is soccer viewership down as well?
Cool. I don't have the soccer viewership in front of me, but yeah, generally live sport is It's not like, okay, waning's a tough word, but it's decreasing incrementally, still.
When Sky Sports don't have one day the deal on the Premiership and then they distribute and syndicate to all the things like DSTV around the world, when Premier League lets you have an app on your smart TV and you pay 125 Rand a month and you have the Premier League with all the punditry around the games,
yeah,
they can have my money. I'll cry tears of joy every time that debit order notification comes in. I'll weep and say a little prayer to Hetfield.
Oh, God, I think the next 5 years are going to be very interesting in that space, because it is. All these broadcasting models have been shaken up, and it's a very difficult place to be in if you're a great broadcaster nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. How you're going to get yourself into the future is, it's a headache of all proportions. But with different zoning and different rights, there's a lot of red tape to go through, so it's not exactly going to be a quick thing.
Well, it's the TV money that makes it possible for the smaller teams to compete and all of that, and makes the game so lucrative for the teams, aside from obviously their own shirt sales, etc. But like, Sky spends so much money, but if Premier League just went, cool, thanks guys, we appreciate the relationship we've had, we're going to be Netflix but soccer,
yeah,
they will be worth billions. Probably already worth billions, but more billions.
Yeah, but it'd be like chasing mice, though. Sure, you might end up with a rat king, but when you get these big organizations giving you the big money, at least it's a pretty much package deal for them. So I think it's easier business, but your point is very valid at this point. But also, to Gord's view, these things cost a lot of money. So Archaic Stone Age Akasa saying, oh, we must make things free, and rightfully Irvin Causa saying, over my big dead body. Because these things cost. This is a product. You can't just give shit away. Simple as that. Lincoln City fans seem to have a fantastic sense of humor, because they went to a recent match with giant inflatable penises, which they were wagging in the air. Just massive, big, giant inflatable dongs, which is quite a strange thing to take to a game.
Those are massive. But where did you get those huge penises from?
Basically, these guys arrive with like these inflatable cock and ball combos, like the size of Sia, and they're waving in the air.
I don't think the penis and Sia comparison is fair, but
yeah, purely on
those are smaller than Sia.
Purely on size.
Not by much, but they're smaller than
Sia. If you wave Sia in the air, that's how big these inflatable penises were. Now, they're playing against Notts County, so why, you ask, why were they doing this? Well, the owner of Notts County, Alan Hardy, accidentally tweeted an inappropriate picture of himself, balls out in a bath.
No.
Alan was obviously shocked and horror, because older men, when they try act sexy, see Ian Botham, they often get their todgers out for no reason. And then the public goes, what's going on here? Alan then hurriedly...
See, are you suddenly interested in sport or still not?
He hurriedly deleted the tweet. He deleted his entire Twitter profile and then...
But Twitter remembers.
And then put the club up for sale, although he then said those two incidents are not related.
No. So, he presumably either did it entirely by accident, like a pocket dial, or he was like trying to sex somebody or something and accidentally tweeted.
All these old guys.
Oh, my God. But also, who is an old guy, young or old, but who's like, hey, baby, I'm in the bath, look at my balls.
No, but that's what happens with these old guys, I reckon, Gord. They take a few Viagras, they pay the right girls, this and that, the girlfriend experience, blah, blah, blah. And suddenly they're getting so brazen, they're taking pictures of their balls in the bath.
Yeah, well, that's it. Like, I mean, a lot of assumptions about the girlfriend experience and paying the right girls. I mean, maybe he's dating a lovely lady and he's just excited to see her for their dinner the next day. But
well, that too.
Old guys photographing their balls the bath. I want to know more.
Old guys are terrible when it comes to dick picking. They put it in the wrong places and then suddenly it's a big kerfuffle. Anyway, so the club is up for sale. And then the Lincoln City fans thought that they would obviously just rub it in a little bit. And they all arrive with these giant cocks.
And they are big cocks.
Oh, I love that story.
And they've actually made it into a fundraising event. So it was about, and they said, look, Alan got his little guy out, so let's get money out for our little guys. And they raised money for prostate cancer.
That's cool. Oh,
how smart are these guys, eh? They started a Just Giving page, and to date, they've raised £1,353.
Sure.
So 7 million rand.
But I love the fact that Alan's surname is...
Alan's surname is...
Hardy.
Well spotted, see, I knew you were getting to that story. Finally, into more football.
Wow. More football.
More football. Qatar, you know, they're hosting the 2020 World Cup. And they have a terrible human rights record. They've got this thing called the kafala, which basically means that you can traffic humans from all different countries and you sort of own people. Yeah. I know that sounds very base, but it's exactly what it is, because workers are then tied to their employer. The employer takes the passports. There's no real basic minimum conditions of pay or working conditions. And then when it's summer, when it's 7,000 degrees, they're still working in the heat. We all know the story. Amnesty International says, look, you guys have got a long way to go. And unfortunately, time is running out because they keep saying, oh, it's okay, it's okay. We're giving them water every fourth, whatever day. And, well, Amnesty Director Stephen Cockburn says, time is running out for Qatari authorities and they want to deliver a legacy we could all cheer about. A labor system that ends the abuse and misery inflicted upon them. So many migrant workers. He was frothing at the mouth around this one. Maybe not, it just sounds better. And all the Qataris are saying, well, yeah, it's getting better, it's getting better. And they are being forced into putting things like minimum wage or basic living conditions. And this is how these guys are able to do such amazing things, because they obviously just really put this,
it's bloody horrible,
the pressure on these guys to work for bugger all.
And they die. Like it's,
and they die, Gore. This is the whole thing. So many people die doing this stuff, and you never hear about it, and they just sweep it under the desert.
It is legit horrible, though, like this whole, and not necessarily only on the World Cup building project, just this thing of, like, you are in utter destitution, and then you go to, like, to get a 1% better situation, you have to give over your passport, you can't get it back, then you owe a tithe to your employer that until you've worked a certain amount and earned a certain amount of money for them, you're in debt to them, you can't get your passport back. It's like, it's literally a form of slavery that's somehow legitimized by, I don't know, religious and legal and traditional bullshit.
And also the beautiful game.
And so these O's, but even if they're not doing stuff for football, and these O's have got money, they can pay the minimum wage.
Yeah. Well, that is World Cup 2022. It is coming close, isn't it? 3 years. And finally today, Man City will be taking on Everton. They win this, they now go to join top with Liverpool, who seem to have hit a bit of a plateau. But as I said months ago, the squad depth will be tested and ultimately Man City will win the league. And that is your sport for this
Wednesday. Please God, Ben. Please God.
All right. Thank you very much, Ben. It is just after 7 o'clock, but it's time before we get to the next hour of news and fun and your calls and everything else for Sia to give us Said by Sia. Take it away.
Can we just have a moment for all of the selfless people down in the Western Cape who are helping with the fires?
Yeah, these fires.
Shucks. We've spoken about it countless times on the show, but I think it's worth raising once again how selfless and courageous you have to be a firefighter when every instinct in your body says run away from this danger. They have to run towards it, to face the heat, to face the smoke, to evacuate people out of their homes, to evacuate animals as well to safety is absolutely extraordinary. And more than that, I've been monitoring social media accounts for VWS fires. That's the Volunteer Wildfire Services. So these are all people who aren't qualified firefighters, but they all sign up and register to say, in any which way possible, I can help, I'd like to.
And the training that those guys go through is unbelievable. I did an article once for Red Bull magazine, when there was such a thing, on like the volunteer firefighter guys. The guy's name was Ivan Johnson. Very successful advertising guy, successful business, family man, not short of shit to do, not short of business to run. Not like a oak with, and they do serious training. Their fitness is like, it's like being in a military organization. It's not like, hey, just turn up and the oaks with the better cardio go up the hill and the fat oaks just chill here and man a hose. They're like drill and practice, and they have like really serious, what's the word, protocols. It's legit as hell, and these are the volunteers.
So they really do amazing things. And what I always say is you can always help somehow, wherever you are, with whatever you can do, wherever, you know, however much you have. Because I just read an article yesterday that said that the fires over the past few weeks in the Western Cape cost about 80 million rands in damage.
Bloody smokers.
Yeah. Jeez. And to see how coffee shops and restaurants have been helping out, just donating food, to how the SAPS has stepped up and evacuating animals, to just people clearing out the roads and parking inside their properties so that fire engines can move freely in the roads. All of these things are absolutely extraordinary. And so I just want to salute that. I also heard of Sandparks, who have deployed some of their rangers from their different reserves to go down to the Western Cape to help there as well. So, yeah, you think about how you would feel if you were in that situation, how helpless and how terrified you'd feel, and how you'd appreciate any sort of help from anyone. How we're all banding up together is extraordinary.
When I lived in Cape Town for a few years, I lived near the fire station on Ruland Street, and we went to go and drop off a 12 pack of 1 liter waters because they were asking for waters and that kind of thing. And you went into the entrance driveway part of the fire station, and they literally were stacking it taller than a man, and they had so much it almost looked like they didn't have a place to put it. People just going and taking waters and that kind of thing. These volunteer firefighters, just they have a system where they wear this fireproof and heatproof stuff that makes them safer and does help to keep some of the heat away. But keep in mind, now they're doing it in summer and they're wearing heavy thick firefighting, so what it saves you from in terms of the flames, you're doing hard work, hard PT, now wearing a centimeter thick rubber suit. But it's not think it's rubber, but it's made of something like that. And they have a thing called a beater, so it's like a broom, but instead of having a fluffy broomy bit at the front, it's got a rubber hitting thing. So imagine they go like old rifle dudes in relays. So a bunch of dudes run to the fire line, they beat for as long as they can, which is typically 10 seconds 15 seconds, until they can't, because they have to take a deep breath, you can't breathe there, beat until the heat gets you, run back, and as you run back the guy behind you goes in and he beats, and you do that in a rotation until you put the fire out. It's incredible.
Sure. It's massive. So really kudos to every single person who's helping out with the fires down in the Western Cape.
Yeah, for sure. And our congratulations to those people who've been able to succeed in some way in keeping these fires under control, because that is a hard business. And it's dry as hell at the moment in the Cape. Dry.
Yeah, I mean, it's the beauty and the curse of Cape Town summer. It's it's warm and beautiful and blue skies and hot all the time. Too hot if you're fat, but hot all the time. But then also it doesn't rain, which isn't great for beachgoers and awful for things that can catch fire.
Yeah, which makes the entire Western Cape a big tinderbox. It's just after 7.
This is CliffCentral.com.